And at that time, there was a lot of speculation going on around the Aspen area for these private lands that exist within wilderness areas. Most people, I think, didn't even know they were there. But various real estate developers started seeing high-value properties close to mostly Aspen and Vail and began to market these properties. And then people began to learn that wilderness isn't zoning. These lands have whatever rights the county says they have, and they can be developed. And we are now a national, we pride ourselves on being the world's smallest national organization. There are four of us who work around the country on inholdings within the whole system.
How do you do your work? Do you find out that there is a specific inholding in this wilderness, and then you work to do what with that?
Well, we worked with Colorado State University when we were founded to develop this tool that inventories and then prioritizes all of the inholdings within wilderness. So we have these huge lists of private lands within wilderness areas, and then we make a point of contacting those owners about every 2 years. We also try to maintain really good relationships with the agencies. And what we found over time is that these properties come on the market about once a generation. About 5% of them come on the market in any 1 year. And you can imagine a family or a business makes a decision when to sell. And we want to make sure that when they choose to do that, were there and able to acquire the land.
So do you raise money then to actually buy the piece of land so that it becomes...
Yes, we do.
Okay, that's how it works.
We do, and we have a cadre of supporters. We always have this kind of conundrum of wanting to work fairly quietly, but at the same time be well-known enough that people know what we're doing. And if it were really easy to sell land to the United States, we'd all go do something else, but it takes, we estimate, about 4 years to complete an acquisition.
Well, and how did these lands, these private lands, get into the middle of wilderness in the first place?
This is where we should cue the kind of old-time music. You know, Congress has a policy now of wanting to preserve these lands. Congress designates all federal lands within this line as wilderness. It's a conservation activity, but manifest destiny in the 19th century, Congress said, go ye forth and settle the West. It was all federal land because we bought it in the Louisiana Purchase and whatnot. Never mind that it was occupied by Native peoples, but it's all considered federal land. And then Congress said, we would like people to settle the West, so we're going to offer mining claims, we're going to offer timber claims, we're going to offer homestead claims, so one could go out and stake these lands and, in the language of this process, prove it up, so that after it's been proved up, it's just a piece of property like anything else. Aspen is built on mining claims. You know, hence we have all these colorful names like the Little Nell, whatnot. That's a mining claim name. But Congress created all of this, all of these islands are scattered, almost pickup sticks, piles of lands, and oftentimes they were the most valuable lands at the mouths of river drainages or on the floor where there was water or where there was the most timber. And they're islands of private land that exist within a federal landscape. They remain, so we're trying to be there to acquire them when they come on the market, if it's in a wilderness area or a proposed wilderness area.
Well, and so you have just done another inventory.
Yes.
And you found that the number of acres of private lands within wilderness has gone down pretty dramatically from 400,000 or so acres in the 1990s
right.
to 180,000 acres today. Is
right.
that mostly due to the work of the Wilderness Land Trust?
It's mostly due to the work of the trust and other partners who are doing this work. We are the primary and the only national organization that's focused on this work solely, but we don't have to do everything. We have partners that help us out and work in other ways. And that's in spite of the fact that the system has grown significantly. It's not a static system where the numbers have gone down. In fact, it's increased. And I should have the number off the top of my head, but I don't.
You mean the wilderness
system? Yeah, the whole
system.
National Wilderness Preservation System is up to 109 million acres now. And in that period of time, the number of private lands within it have gone down. But there are still a little over 2,800 separate parcels, separate properties, and separate landowners who may not share wilderness values and own land within the system. And many of them would like roads. Many of them would like to develop their property.
And, I mean, have you seen cases where private lands within the wilderness actually jeopardize, you know, the wilderness character of the place?
Yes. You know, right now we're working on a piece of property that's on the main fork of the Salmon River in the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness. And it's a relatively small property in acres, 38 acres, but it borders the river itself. On it is a home. It was formerly a mine. There are two permitted jet boat landing areas on the property. So the existence of that property compromises the wilderness experience, because if you're on the river or in the middle of nowhere, suddenly there's this home.
And in the Maroon Bells Snowmass Wilderness, you know, the area right out our back doors here in the Aspen area, how many private inholdings are there?
There are 799 acres of private lands within the Snowmass Maroon Bells Wilderness in 23 separate parcels. And we've already acquired and transferred about the same amount. We're about halfway there to being able to say, yep, it's totally unified. Our two most recent acquisitions, I think they're pretty interesting. One of them was, we know it as the Out West Placer. Everybody else knows it as the trailhead on West Maroon on the Crested Butte side. We bought it in the year 2000 when a for sale sign went up on it. Nobody knew it was privately owned, but it was 60 acres of private land. The trailhead was on it. The parking lot was on it. Everyone thought it was part of the wilderness, but the owner actually had a different opinion. So we were, with the support of some local generous folks, able to acquire it before it ever became one of the big brouhahas that we all get involved in around here, and then transfer it into federal ownership in 2003. And then more recently, the Rocky Mountain Biological Laboratory on the Gothic side, they have this longitudinal data on climate change that doesn't exist anywhere else. And their concern has been that increased traffic and the dust that comes from that compromises those data. So they're worried about roads. Well, we acquired something called the Denver Load, which is up a dirt road out of Gothic back toward the east, to eliminate that road, to eliminate the private inholding that was the top of it. It furthered the wilderness values by being able to make that experience of going up the drainage to be a wilderness experience, not competing with a Jeep. And then on top of it, helps Rumble keep their data, their ongoing study that's important to monitoring global climate change, accurate and not compromised.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure.